which is appeal number 08-1686, United States versus Abner Robertson. And again, Ms. Mullen is on the speakerphone, and Mr. Schwing, you're here, and you will be back for the fifth case today.
Yes, Your Honor. Good morning, Your Honors, and good morning, counsel. May it please the court, Abner Robertson pleaded guilty to a felon in possession of a firearm charge, and the facts are kind of important here, I think. What had happened was that on January 16th, a controlled buy of something, I don't think the record tells us what, and we can assume it's a controlled substance, I guess, was made at Mr. Robertson's residence. He was arrested the following day during, or a search was conducted of his apartment, in which the officers found a small amount of marijuana and some drug paraphernalia. And in the bedroom, they found the gun, which was the basis for the felon in possession charge. Mr. Robertson had told the police that he had obtained the gun 2 weeks previously, and that he had used it for protection. At sentencing, the pre-sentence report recommended a four-level increase in the sentence, claiming that the gun had been used in connection or possessed in connection with a felony. Mr. Robertson objected, claimed that the gun was not used in connection with any felony. The judge disagreed and gave him a four-level increase in the sentence. I'd like to start out by talking about the burden of proof in this case. The burden of proof is with the government, and the burden of proof requires the government to, number one, prove a felony. Actually, I think the guideline isn't, you know, particularly clear. I think the guideline means felonious conduct or conduct that would have been a felony doesn't require a felony conviction. And I think the standard there is preponderance of the evidence, like in a civil case. The second thing the government has to prove is that the gun was used or possessed in connection with that felony. So there's sort of a two- or three-part process here. The guideline is specific, and I think it would help to put this argument in perspective to compare it with the correlative drug-gun enhancement that the guidelines also contain in 2D2.1. In this case, we have a gun conviction and sort of a drug enhancement. Over in 2D2.1, we find ourselves in a situation where there's the drug conviction and there's the gun enhancement. And the two guideline provisions work very differently. In the case of a conviction for drugs, all that's required is that the gun was possessed. In this case, on the other hand, in the case of conviction for guns, there's an additional requirement. There has to be a felony shown, two additional requirements, really, a felony shown and the in connection requirement shown. And I, from my review of the cases, Your Honor, I don't think that the courts have been treating these very different guideline provisions differently, and they certainly require a different burden of proof, different elements. The Wyatt case is distressingly, and we both talk about that in our briefs, the United States versus Wyatt, is sort of distressingly close on its facts to this case, but I think there are some important differences here that take this beyond the holding in Wyatt. In Wyatt, the police had done a search. They found guns and drug stash and such like all in the same general area, the kitchen, I believe it was. In this case, we have the guns off in the bedroom. We don't know whether it's accessible. Is it under a mattress? Is it locked up? I don't think the record tells us anything about that.
I thought it was in the closet.
Yeah, that's right. It was in the closet. I'm sorry. It was found in the closet.
There was an admission that the drug sales were taking place in the house.
That's right, and that's why I think there's a significant, and I hope you agree, significant difference between this case and Wyatt, because here we have a two-week window a two-week window where the drug was possessed, and nobody contested that. Mr. Robertson said, I got the gun a couple of weeks ago. So we have 2 weeks of possession, culminated, ending when the gun was seized on the 17th. We have the controlled buy that was made on the 16th, and that's the only drug felony that we know happened during the time when the gun was there. So.
And is there a requirement in the law to have more? To have more buys? To have more drug felonies? Isn't this one enough?
Certainly. One drug felony. Right. Assuming this was a drug felony, and I think
right.
we all do that.
Because it was a controlled crack cocaine purchase the day before at his apartment, or at the apartment.
I don't think the record tells us that, Your Honor. I think the record tells us that there was a controlled buy. I think any sale of a controlled substance is a felony under federal law, with one exception. I could be wrong. And that's
so the search warrant for the apartment didn't specify there was crack cocaine that had been sold prior to the
I cannot before. Recall. I wish I could, Your Honor. But even so... I think the only thing that you can sell under federal law without it being a felony is a steroid, since a professional athlete is exception to the drugs. So we have this one incident that we know about happened during that time, and that's felonious conduct. Now, the government's burden was to show that gun in the bedroom, in the closet, was connected with that particular sale on that one day. And they didn't do that, and the judge didn't make a finding to that effect either. The judge based his finding sort of on this generic, non-specified drug dealing. And it's not clear to me that there's anything on the record that hooks up this gun possession or this gun in the closet with the sale of the controlled substance at the controlled buy, of the controlled buy on the 6th.
So
on
you
the
think
16th.
That his statement after he was given his Miranda warnings, admitting that the gun was his and that he bought the gun for protection, and that he stole small amounts of cocaine out of his apartment, you think that's not enough?
Correct. That's essentially it, Your Honor. Because selling small drugs out of an apartment doesn't, to my mind, prove that there's a felony here. I think there is a felony here, but I don't think that the gun was connected with it. And I think that's the government's burden of proof. I'd like to address the issue of waiver very briefly, because the government has claimed that this issue has been waived. It's the precise issue, and probably I think the only issue that was preserved on the record. Mr. Robertson objected that this gun wasn't used in connection with a felony. I'm arguing on appeal that the government didn't meet its burden of proof in showing that the gun was used in connection with the only felony that would qualify. And unless the court has any other questions, I'd like to reserve my time.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Mullen.
May it please the court, Linda Mullen on behalf of the United States. I won't belabor the waiver argument, but I do want to address it briefly. It is true, of course, that the defendant did challenge this enhancement below. There are two things that the government must prove in order, by preponderance of the evidence, in order for the enhancement to apply. And one is that Robertson committed another felony offense, and the other is that he used or possessed the firearm in connection with that felony offense. Now, below, the sole focus of the objection was that the defendant did not commit a felony offense. The argument was the most that can be found here is that Mr. Robertson was engaged in personal drug use. There was no felony here. There was no suggestion that the gun wasn't in the house. It was just that you don't have a felony offense here. On appeal, he completely switches gears and is now arguing nothing about personal use versus selling drugs. In fact, he's admitting that he sold drugs and is now arguing that the gun was not used in connection with that or that the government failed to prove that. We think that this is classic waiver. This is a situation where the defendant intentionally relinquished this argument by deciding to present a distinctly different one. Moving on to the merits of the case, as some of the court's questioning pointed out, there's nothing in the case law that suggests that we must prove, that the government must prove, that that gun was used the day of the controlled purchase. The district court found and the government proved that Robertson was engaged in drug trafficking out of his apartment. Robertson admitted that he was selling crack cocaine out of the apartment. We had the controlled purchase of narcotics the day before the search warrant is executed. We have indicia of drug trafficking in the apartment, the scales, the baggies with the corners cut off, the police scanner, and we have the gun, the loaded gun found in the same bedroom as the police scanner. So that satisfied the in connection requirement, and that was all that the government needed to prove in this case. If the panel has no questions, I'll return the balance of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Schwing, anything further?
A couple of things. Thank you, Your Honor. On the waiver situation, I think what the government is really complaining of here is that the defendant didn't alert it to or shoulder its burden of proof at sentencing. If the government doesn't put on evidence, it's not the defendant's job to do that for him. And I would like to talk about what is required to apply this enhancement very briefly, because there's something in Wyatt that the government relies on that concerns me, and that's the statement in Wyatt that I quote this, no indication on a record that the guns were not readily accessible. And on that basis and others, the enhancement wasn't affirmed in Wyatt. And I think that exactly reverses their burden of proof. This harks back to the days when there was something in the guidelines that says the enhancement applies unless it's clearly improbable. I think your honors recall that one, that the gun was not used in connection with a felony. That's all gone. The burden of proof remains with the government at all times, and I think they didn't carry it in this case. Thank you.
Thank you to both sides, and thank you, Mr. Schwing, for accepting the appointment in this case. We'll proceed to case 4.